Just about 8 minutes after 8 o'clock, you're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. John Munson in for Joy Cardine, who will, by the way, be back on Monday. But thank goodness it's Friday. We're just about at the weekend, and of course, we're also at one of the most popular features of the Joy Cardine program, the Week in Review, where we get a pair of perspectives on the news of the week, and as usual, there was plenty of it. First, let's meet our guests. I'm joined on the phone today by Owen Robinson, columnist at the West Bend Daily News, whose blog is featured at bootsandsabers.com. Owen, good morning.
Good morning, John.
And also joining me, John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party, a member of the Wisconsin Governor's Commission on the United Nations. John Smart, good morning.
Good morning, John, and good morning, Owen.
Good morning.
All right. Well, let's start with state news. A lot of it, of course, to talk about the results of the election finally taking effect as Governor Walker was inaugurated as Wisconsin's 45th governor. And he immediately called a special session of the legislature to take up, among other initiatives, tort reform. Owen, let's start with you on this. Talk about tort reform, and do we need it? Don't we need it? What's the deal here?
Well, we absolutely do need it, and some of the things in here are things that Wisconsin has needed for quite some time, and it's good to see Governor Walker follow through on his promises to start with jobs, and that's exactly what he's starting with. So if you look at some of the very specific tort reforms he has, Wisconsin, for instance, in its tort law has this provision primarily aimed at the lead paint group, where the Supreme Court ruled where if you made lead paint back in the 50s, any manufacturer, and some kid gets sick by eating lead paint, you can be held liable even if it can't be proven that you even made that lead paint and if the kid ate your paint. So you have this sort of broad liability that stretches across industries and across businesses. And what that really does to the consumers and to businesses in Wisconsin is drive up their insurance costs. It makes it more expensive to do business in Wisconsin. And that's just one of the items. There's half a dozen things in here that really will help bring down the insurance costs, bring down the liability possibilities, at the same time protecting consumers and protecting Wisconsinites so if they are damaged, they can be made whole through our legal system as we would expect it to do.
John Smart?
I think that this really comes out of a basic disagreement with the trial lawyers. And every time that there's a Republican administration, they talk about tort reform, and it's a way of getting back at the trial lawyers. And I think that this is exactly what this is. I think it's a lot of brouhaha over nothing, frankly.
There were a number of other initiatives proposed in the order calling for this special session. Governor Walker is proposing some tax relief for small businesses. John Smart, why don't you talk about that first?
Well, I think tax relief for small businesses is probably very much in line with what needs to be done. I don't think there's any question about that. There are a lot of other things, however, in this so-called special session that do concern me, and I'm sure we'll get into other things. But as far as tax relief for small businesses, yes, if it's properly defined and directed.
What about some of the other initiatives in the call for the special session? Why don't you just go ahead and talk? We'll just go ahead and talk about them all at once.
Well, there's a whole raft of things, and I think you might want to suggest some area that we want to talk about.
Well, did you have one? Did you have one specific in mind that
particularly? No, I don't have anything specific in mind.
All right, Owen, what about the small business tax relief? Long overdue.
Long overdue. I think it's a positive step. I was happy also to see that in the statements talking about it that they would cut spending elsewhere in state spending to make sure that that the money is there to do it rather than either go into more debt or increase spending. So I thought that was a good positive thing. And many of the other things in the special session that are being proposed are positive as well. For instance, making health savings accounts, giving a tax credit for those, as all but four other states in the nation do, doing things like the supermajority for being able to pass tax increases, although there's a lot of holes in the way that's being proposed, at least it's a start. At least it's an acknowledgement that we have reached a limit to what Wisconsinites can bear in their tax burden, and that to increase it anymore, it should take a supermajority, should take overwhelming support based on our representative government.
Let's talk about that for a moment, because some of the news reports that I read, not all Republicans in the legislature were on board with that. John Smart, did you hear about that?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's actually pretty interesting because it's happening in the Senate, where state Senate Republicans are actually it's a good debate from a conservative's perspective to see, because they're actually debating on who's going to be the more conservative here, with a cadre of Republicans who want to go beyond making it law and make it constitutional, and actually propose a constitutional amendment to make the supermajority required for increasing taxes. Because of law, there's this very powerful word in the legislature. It's called notwithstanding, where if there's a law that limits the legislature, they can say, notwithstanding that law, we're going to do it anyway. So it is a positive thing to see that debate in the Wisconsin State Senate among Republicans. From my perspective, I say do both. Pass the law now. It takes a lot of effort to amend the Constitution. It takes two consecutive legislatures passing the exact same amendment and then a popular vote. So it's 3-4 years out before that can even happen. And we need some assurances right now that it will be difficult to increase the burden on Wisconsinites.
John Smart, what's your take on the supermajority proposal?
I think that it's probably inevitable also. As Owen said, we're one of very few states in the nation that don't have it now.
And you see any problems with it, any difficulties with this, any reason not to do it?
I think that that will all come out in the debate. As Owen said, it's going to take two sessions of the legislature to even get it into a position to be discussed, but there'll be a lot of debate about that issue. And I haven't seen the full rundown about how they want to deal with it yet either, so I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm going to give the phone number because I'm sure people would care to get in on this issue, and even if we've moved on, I think we'll take calls on this so as they come in. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. There's been a lot of talk about cutting the budget, not a lot of specifics yet, but specifics about tax cuts. I want to toss this question out to both of you, and it's not actually part of our list, but it's something you both, I'm sure, are very familiar with, and that is the question that I've had since the campaign. Everybody's talking about cutting the budget, but the elephant in the room is the biggest areas of expense in state government are aides to local education and Medicaid, and you could probably throw in the prisons there as well, and aides to local government. If you're not planning to cut any of those, the amount of money left in the discretionary portion of the budget is probably not enough to close the budget hole. So what do you think Scott Walker is going to do on this issue? And Owen, I'll go to you first.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, John, in that the largest area of government spends are of course, the two-thirds funding, so-called two-thirds funding for local schools and the money sent out to local municipalities. And, of course, the actual state workers. There are tens of thousands of state workers pulling salaries and pensions and all those things that we're paying for. You cannot make substantial changes in the budget without touching those items. I think that's understood. And I think you've seen Walker express some understanding of that as well, and where he's talking about very serious, actually out of the gate, fairly mild, but hopefully long-term more serious reforms to how we compensate our state workers to bring it more in line with what Wisconsinites can afford. I think that we're going to see some changes in how school K through 12 school funding is done in the formulas and how that's done and whether there's a cap put back on that and all of those things. But absolutely, I don't think you can move forward without touching those items. And as far as Medicaid and specifically talking to Badger Care, Governor Doyle and the Democratic legislature over the past few years have used Badger Care as a vehicle to spread government health care, essentially. So Wisconsin actually has one of the highest rates of people. There's, last I heard, I believe, somewhat like a million people on Badger Care, where it started out as a very small program designed at filling the gaps for kids and the very poor who couldn't afford it, for making sure they have health care. Now it's expanded where you have people without kids and just individuals being able to sign up and be on it, and it's expanded quite a bit, and I think we should expect to see some reforms in that area as well. But Governor Walker and this legislature ran on a very strong campaign of we have to get our fiscal house in order, and we cannot do that without cutting spending, and they were elected. So I think they have a responsibility to follow through with those promises.
John Smart?
I think that he's right in the sense that they do have a responsibility to at least look at these problems. I'm more concerned specifically myself with education, And I am very concerned about what's going to happen with education. Before the election, I tried to find out what the two candidates for governor were thinking about education policy. I serve on the board of an organization called the Wisconsin Alliance for Excellent Schools, WAES, and we're very concerned about this. The school funding formula that we have in place now is inadequate and not working at all, to the point where we spend about half as much up here in the Northwoods for per student cost for education as they do in places like, say, Whitefish Bay. And that's just not the way it should be. And I'm very concerned about that. And again, I was doing some studying beforehand, before the election. Tom Barrett had a very, very elaborate plan about how to reconstruct the school funding formula. It's kind of also what State Superintendent Tony Evers is proposing as well. And they've done a lot of work in looking into this. Every time I talk to Scott Walker's campaign about trying to get information about school funding formulas, I was told that Scott Walker believes that school funding and curriculum are a local issue. Well, that's basically throwing it all back on the backs of local property taxpayers and people who are not really qualified to develop a curriculum, and that concerns me greatly. I'm very concerned about what that's going to mean. And I understand that budgets have to be cut and that money is not there. However, to people who think that we are in a deep recession and money is scarce and so therefore we can cut back on schools is, I think, you know, whistling in the dark, because if we don't educate our young people better than we're doing now, we're not going to get out of this recession.
We have a comment from Nina on Facebook who writes, how long is it going to take Governor Walker to renegotiate the contracts for various state workers that were bargained for in good faith and should have been signed in December? And I'll start with John Smart on this one.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people who are very concerned about that, because Governor Walker has made several comments about the fact that he plans to, if necessary, decertify, whatever that means, the state employees union. And I think that that's a very scary prospect. I agree with the writer that this sort of thing was negotiated and arrived at in good faith, and I'm afraid of something that might happen along those lines, too. This is obviously not going to be a very pro-union administration. I think that's clear.
Owen Robinson?
Well, first off, it should have been signed over a year and a half ago. Those negotiations were drug on forever and then tried to ram through during a lame duck session. So I do think that there should have been a contract put in place long ago, but again, it should have been long ago. And when the voters made it clear that they wanted a change in direction in November, I thought it was irresponsible for the legislature then to try and pull that through. I would point out, though, that it was not Republicans that killed it. Republicans were in the minority. It was actually the Senate Majority Leader who cast the deciding vote to kill those contracts. So I think Governor Walker has a large task ahead of him to both put that contract into place and put the next one in place, and that's going to make it a fairly contentious spring. But I think that state workers should and those unions should realize that they have to participate in our economy just like everyone else, and if there's pain going around, we should all share it. If there's goodness going around, we should all share it. But I think they've had it pretty good for the past couple years, and it's time to stand up.
We have been talking about Governor Walker, but there was a sea change in the state legislature as well. In addition to Republican Scott Walker's inauguration, Republican majorities took power in the Assembly and the Senate this past Monday. This also made two brothers in the state the state's most powerful legislators. The new Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald has been named, and his brother is Jeff Fitzgerald is the Speaker of the Assembly. And I'm just wondering, and we'll start with you, Owen Robinson, what your prediction is as to how the Fitzgerald brothers will lead the Wisconsin State Legislature.
So far, indications are that both the Fitzgeralds have a conservative history. They're both fiscal conservatives. They've shown it over the years. It is kind of a quirk of history, I think, that they both end up as majority leaders, speaker and majority leader at the same time, and it makes for interesting story. But beyond that, I do think that they both have strong majorities in their caucuses and in their houses, their respective houses of the legislature. At the same time, this is always a dangerous time for those of us on the more conservative wing of the party, particularly on the fiscally conservative wing of the party, where there's still a squishy middle of the Republican caucus, and I think the Fitzgeralds both have a task ahead of them to keep those people in line to really pass the serious reforms that Scott Walker and the Republicans ran on to make sure that they do get passed and that they do make the substantial changes in Wisconsin that they ran on and that we think we need.
John Smart?
I can't make much prediction as far as the Fitzgerald brothers either. I have no idea how that's going to work out. And I don't think anybody does. And I agree with Owen. It makes a good news story, and that's probably about as much as it accounts for it.
Well, what about John Smart? What about Scott Fitzgerald's comment? He said the first order of business in the Senate is to require photo ID to vote. Do you see that happening, and do you think it should be done?
They've been talking about that for a long time. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, and it would be interesting to see what kind of a bill comes out of that. I'm not against the idea of having a proper identification to vote, whatever it might be, but it depends, on whether it becomes an onerous detail for people to agree to get to vote. I don't think we should put log jams in the way of people getting to the polls. I guess I put it that way.
Owen Robinson?
Well, I think to voter ID, I agree with John. I do think that it's something that Wisconsin needs, but at the same time, to make sure that we certainly want to make sure people can exercise their franchise in a normal fashion. And I think there are so many other states that have forms of photo ID, and it works, and people are able to exercise their franchise. So I don't have much doubt that can be done in a good way. I do think that in this legislature, we're seeing the same thing we saw when the Democrats were swept into power during the last cycle, and that all these bills that sat in the drawer for the past couple years, gaining a little mold and getting a little dusty because they were never going to get passed, are being pulled out and put forth. And you have 60 Republicans in the majority in the Assembly and 19 in the Senate, and they all have their own ideas and their own agendas and their own things they want to do. And I think that going back a little bit to the Fitzgeralds and also to Scott Walker, who I think has been good on this front, right now Republicans were elected to turn around the economy and to revive Wisconsin's economy and to bring government spending and government largesse in the line. They really need to keep their caucus disciplined in those items to make sure that they focus on those things. There are other things that need to be done. There's redistricting, which is constitutionally required. There's all these other things that have to be done. But first order of business has to be jobs, 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 economy, economy, economy.
All right, it's the Week in Review here on the Joy Cardine program. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. She'll be back next week. The phone number to call if you'd like to talk about a top news story of the week is 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@WPR.org or join us on Facebook. Look for the Joy Cardine Facebook fan page and leave a comment there. I'll share it with the listening audience. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. It's 8:27. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. Here's something you might be interested in tonight. On Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television, President of the Wisconsin Civil Justice Council, Bill Smith, and personal injury attorney Daniel Rotier discuss Scott Walker's newly proposed tort reform. We had those two on the air here earlier this week on the Joy Cardine program. Also, conservative radio host Charlie Sykes and liberal columnist John Nichols join Here and Now for an analysis of what to expect from the new Walker administration. That's on Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television. Check your local listings. It is the Week in Review here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Owen Robinson is one of my guests. He's columnist at the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. I'm also joined by John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party and a member of the Wisconsin Governor's Commission on the United Nations. Let's talk about Congress. New Congress was sworn in this week, and John Boehner was elected the Speaker of the House yesterday. They read the Constitution in the new Congress, and it's impossible, I think, to do anything without controversy. You wouldn't think there'd be any controversy about reading the Constitution, but there ended up being some disagreements over that. The Republicans have the House of Representatives, and the Democrats still control the Senate, but Control in the Senate is probably a little bit of an oxymoron. You often wonder if anyone actually controls the Senate, but the Democrats still have a majority there. The first big vote for the House of Representatives will be a vote to Republicans proposing to repeal the health care bill that Congress passed in the last session. And I'll start with you, Owen Robinson. This bill is likely not to go anywhere. Is this symbolic, or is this a real piece of legislation we should take seriously?
I think it is largely symbolic, but it's also something that they promised to do during the campaign, and they're fulfilling that promise. And I think that what it does do is send a clear message of that there are two sides of this debate with very serious concerns about how this legislation will affect America. And hopefully it keeps that debate alive and allows us to keep talking about it, because it's a huge, huge deal that we'll need to be concerned with for quite some time.
John Smart?
I think that I understand what Owen is saying, that the Republicans who have now taken control of the House feel an obligation to call for repealing of the health care program, but I don't think it's going to happen, obviously. And it's interesting to see how these things come about. I was looking at some history about the the establishment of the Social Security program back in the 30s, and it was the same kind of discussion and the same kind of debate that was going on. And it got passed. It got passed in what many Democrats at the time considered to be a watered-down version, and was later kind of tinkered with and adapted and changed and fine-pointed, and it turned out to be a pretty good program that people are very concerned about right now. And I think the same thing will happen with the health care program. Health care reform was desperately needed, and it's inevitable that it's going to be that way. Also, I think the Republicans are not looking into what it would cost now to repeal it. I mean, the Congressional Budget Office says it's going to cost over $230 billion over 10 years and more cost after that to the national debt if we do repeal it because of things that have already happened. And I think that they need to take that into consideration, too.
Let me just ask you, Owen Robinson, this was in the news this morning about this, and you made the comment that they have to make this vote because they promised they would in the election. Did they promise? I mean, I'm wondering if on those stump speeches and in the commercials that we saw for people running for Congress, if the promise was, I promise to vote for a repeal of the health care law, or I promise that we'll repeal the health care law. And will some voters feel like they have been a victim of bait and switch if it's just a symbolic vote and they don't actually manage to do it?
I think the reality is that as long as President Obama is in the White House, that bill will not be repealed. And I think that any thinking person in the election would recognize that even if the Republicans took both houses of legislature, it's still going to be 2 years before that there's even a chance of that actually happening. I think that from what I heard, and I can't speak to the entire country, but looking right here in Wisconsin with now Senator Johnson and Sean Duffy and all of the Republicans running for national office here in Wisconsin, they were pretty clear on the stump that they would vote to repeal or vote to do what they could to limit the effects of it. And I think that the Republicans taking the House, where all spending bills have to originate, have the opportunity, and I think that the electorate expects them, particularly base Republicans, expect them to do what they can to limit the damage of Obamacare. And if that doesn't happen, I think there will be a lot of disillusionment, and I would expect to see Republicans fall hard in the next cycle. They were elected for some very specific reasons. This is kind of an unusual election, that there were very specific things they were talking about and specific promises they were making, and now they have to deliver.
I was interested to hear a story on Wisconsin Public Radio this past Monday morning. Sean Duffy, who was newly elected, the first Republican to be elected in the 7th District for, I don't know, since the Ice Age, since Mel Laird, anyway, was saying that he didn't know if he could vote for repeal unless the Republicans had an alternative ready to go. And so far, we haven't really heard about one. But I'm just wondering if there are other Republicans who may feel the way he does and may be hesitant to just simply vote to repeal the whole thing without some sort of alternative in place.
I think that, and that was a big theme during the election also, the reform, or do they pull some of it back or repeal all of it? I think that certainly I agree with John by the fact that our healthcare system does need some serious reform. I think this reform is the wrong answer, and I do think that something needs to be done. But you have to start somewhere. You have to start with getting rid of the bad stuff and try and get the good stuff in. So I would expect if the repeal vote goes through, which I expect it would, but that we'll see some other alternatives shortly come out of the House.
Let's take a call from Art in Green Bay, who has a comment on the health care. Art, good morning.
Yes, good morning. One of the things that I think has been left out of this is the way that debates were carried on with the health care program. It was just a lot of lack of information to the public, and more keeps coming out in dribs and drabs, as they say. But one of the things that I think is that we really need to pay attention to is the number of physicians who have said that they would either retire or get out of their family practice and go into some big hospital somewhere instead of trying to maintain their private practice because of all the regulations and stipulations that are put on it with Obamacare. And I think that if nothing else is out there to look at, that alone should tell us that we really need to seriously reconsider what was done with this health care law, and this time do it honestly and openly with open public debate and with honest and open coverage by the media of what's actually in the bill. You know, such as, did anybody ever suspect that they would find that school college financing and things, school loan program was going to be taken over in this? And who knows how many other things are stashed away in 2,300 pages of congressional office gobbledygook. So, but I think that my main point is that we should look at what the doctors have said that they plan to do as a result of this. And I'll take any comments off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Art, John Smart, why don't you go first on this one?
Yeah, I think the doctors that the caller is talking about, probably older doctors who are don't want any change in their current situation. I've talked to younger doctors who are very excited about the prospect of the new healthcare reform business going through, and I think that that's kind of the direction that we need to take. I think that everybody is fearful about this, and I recognize that. As I said, looking back at the beginnings of Social Security or of Medicare, a lot of other of those kinds of programs, they also were treated with dread and fear at the beginning because it was kind of the unknown. And I recognize that the bill was too long by any stretch of the imagination, thousands of pages. And it ended up that way, though, because it was so well gone over. The caller was complaining that the people were left in the dark. I don't think so. I was following it pretty closely, and it seemed to me like everything was made available for us to follow closely. I would also like to throw in something. I'm getting sick of the people using the term Obamacare. Actually, my old friend Dave Obey had a lot more to do with writing that bill than Barack Obama did, and Dave Obey's been working on it for 25 or 30 years, so I don't think it's anything fresh off the charts.
Let's switch topics and talk a little bit about some other things going on in Congress. The incoming chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee is Representative Daryl Issa from California. Issa, who has made a name for himself as a partisan politician and somebody who has had some big differences with the president, calling him one of the most corrupt presidents in modern times. He's going to be in charge of the Oversight Committee, and we will probably be holding a lot of hearings. And John Smart, we'll start with you on this one. What do you expect from Chairman Issa on that Oversight Committee, and are there going to be a lot of people in the Obama administration who are going to need to have cots in the Capitol building because they'll be there so often?
I don't know. Daryl Issa is kind of a bomb. You don't know when it's going to go off. He's been doing this for a long time. And coming out and calling this president the most corrupt in modern times is really absurd. And so I have no idea what kind of fireworks we're going to get from Mr. Issa, but I'm afraid it's not going to be very flattering to the nation.
Owen Robinson?
Well, I think you know, there is a constitutional responsibility of the legislature to provide oversight for the executive branch and for what goes on in government and how what they choose to do to see that it's enacted in a way that they intend it to be enacted. So I do think I'm a little wary of there being any witch hunts or anything like that. I think that's counterproductive. At the same time, if there are serious concerns about some of these items, they should be investigated, and I look forward to those getting the sunshine that they deserve.
In the Senate, meanwhile, perhaps one of the more dysfunctional deliberative bodies anywhere that I'm aware of, Senate Democrats have what they think may be a small window of opportunity to tame the filibuster power that Republicans have used so effectively in recent years. They are trying to change some of the filibuster rules in the Senate, remove things like anonymous holds and stuff like that. And Owen Robinson, I'm wondering what you think about that effort.
The filibuster, the bane of majorities everywhere. This always comes up when power gets close or when there's a transition of power in the Senate where the majority wants to do away with it because they're frustrated with the minority being able to use to stall or delay or even thwart legislation. When they get in the minority, then they love it. So we saw this when the Democrats took control of the Senate as well. I don't think they're going to change it substantially to do away with the filibuster, and I hope they don't. I think that if they do, the Democrats will regret it should they get in the minority in the next cycle or the cycle after that. You know, the Senate was, from its founding, designed to be the slower, more deliberative body. Much of that was thrown away with the 17th Amendment, but you know, the filibuster is one of the last vestiges of that, and I would hope that they try to remain that. Otherwise, it just becomes another House of Representatives with fewer people in it.
John Smart?
Well, first of all, the filibuster doesn't go back as far as the founders, but and I don't think that anybody's talking about actually doing away with the filibuster. What they're doing is they're trying to tighten up the rules a little bit so that it's not as crazy as it is now. I think when most people think of the filibuster, they think of Jimmy Stewart in that movie standing there until he collapses in a heap, and it's not operated that way anymore. Now a member of the Senate can basically call into the Senate clerk and say, I'm going to filibuster this bill, and then go on vacation to Florida and not have to do anything. And I think that that's silly. What it does basically is it holds up nominations, it holds up legislation. It takes a month to 6 weeks to bring it back again, whatever it is, and that's just crazy. I keep thinking of something else that my friend Dave Obey says. He said that the Senate is the place where good legislation goes to die. And at the end of the last session of the Congress, there were over 425 bills that had been passed by the House of Representatives that died in the Senate without ever even hearing of debate. And I think that some kind of tightening up of the Senate rules is absolutely necessary. I agree with that old phrase that I don't remember exactly now who it was, Tom Paine or somebody, that said that the Senate was a cooling saucer. In other words, if your tea is too hot, you pour a little into the saucer and let it cool before you drink it. And that was the original intent, and I think that that was a fine intent. And it still could serve that purpose, but I just think that the rules as they are now are being taken advantage of. There have been more filibusters in the past 4 years than there had been in the 50 or 60 years before that. This is getting crazy, and it's getting out of hand, and I think it needs to be cleaned up.
Well, Owen, I was just wondering, what do you think about things like one person being able to stop a piece of legislation? You know, forget about the idea that you need a two-thirds majority to get a debate on something, but there are anonymous holds and things like that. I don't think most Americans understand why the Senate would have rules like that, but do you think that is something that could possibly be reformed?
I think that that could be reformed. I do disagree with anonymity in any regard when it comes to a deliberative body like that, where, frankly, if a senator wants to hold something up, they should stand up and say why. And I would welcome a reform like that.
We have an email going back to the health care. I figured we'd get a lot of action on this, and we are getting some emails about it. I've got an email from Jeff in Madison. And this question is directed at you, Owen. He says, when you talk about bad things in this healthcare program, could you explain what you mean by bad?
Sure. We'll talk about something that went into effect just this week with the oncoming of the new year, where the healthcare reform actually mandates what insurance companies have to pay out in benefits, as opposed to being able to keep as profits or share. I know it's a bad word to some people, but as profits or shareholder information, and that goes directly against how insurance works. Because frankly, on a year-to-year basis, an insurance company may have a great year where everybody doesn't get sick and it's wonderful, and they reap windfall profits, if you would like to call it that, from that. And the next year, everybody gets sick and they're in the hole. They have to have those reserves to be able to pay out that money. It's had a direct effect in Wisconsin already, with some Wisconsin healthcare insurance providers and agents being laid off because the reform mandates that they can no longer afford to pay them. So I think that there's a lot of things going on here. And back to Art's call from earlier, he was very correct, and I don't have the study in front of me, but I recall seeing it, but where many doctors are saying where this is implemented, they will be either changing their practice to an all-cash basis to get completely out of the system, if you will, or retiring altogether because they are closer to retirement. At the same time, looking at those younger doctors getting into medical school, saying, if I'm going to come out of med school with $250,000 in debt and have my income limited to such a fashion, I can't afford to take that line of living. So I think it has a lot of long-term negative effects that we're beginning to see, and I hope that we can put a stop to it before we see much more of it.
John Smart, you care to comment, and then we're going to go to a break.
Yeah, I'd like to comment a little bit. I think that what Owen is talking about basically are the insurance companies. The insurance companies have caused a great deal of problem for doctors. I recognize that. I had cardiac surgery up in Duluth a number of years ago, and I talked to my cardiologist one time when I was lying in the hospital bed up there, and I said, what do you think about the insurance companies? And he said, don't get me started on that one. I just spent most of the morning talking to a woman in Omaha who was trying to convince me that one of my patients does not need cardiac surgery. And I asked her where she had studied medicine, and she said, I haven't, but I've studied statistics. And I'm afraid that's the kind of thing that we're fighting against.
All right. It's the Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. We're getting a couple of different perspectives from Owen Robinson, columnist at the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com, and John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party and a member of the Wisconsin Governor's Commission on the United Nations, and your comments and calls as well. It's the Week in Review. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. It is 8:47. You're listening to the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of WPR. And it's time for our Week in Review quiz. We do this every Friday at this time. And if you're the lucky winner, you'll have your choice of one of the books recently featured on the Joy Cardine Show. Here is this week's quiz question. On Monday, Scott Walker became Wisconsin's 45th governor. As part of the inauguration festivities, which song by the group The Fifth Dimension was performed by a Green Bay choir? I'll read that again. On Monday, Scott Walker became Wisconsin's 45th governor. As part of the inauguration festivities, which song by the group The Fifth Dimension was performed by a Green Bay choir? Call us at 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you think you know the answer. We'll give you a few minutes to do that, and then we'll pick a random winner from all of the correct answers. And we'll announce that winner before the end of the program. We have a caller on the line from Wanakee. Dave is with us, and he has a comment he'd like to make. Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, there was a poll conducted poll was released this week, conducted by 60 Minutes Vanity Fair, asking people how best to reduce the deficit, or what would be the first step. And they were given four choices: cut Social Security, cut Medicare, cut defense, and increase taxes on the wealthy. 3% preferred to cut Social Security, 4% said cut Medicare, 20% said cut defense. 61% said raise taxes on the wealthy. And what I think is that most of the media misread the sweeping results of the last election. It wasn't in favor of cutting taxes. It was do something about our unemployment. I think Americans are very angry, and they want to see this overall fairness taken into account. I mean, the wealthy are basically the cause of our problem. We should tax the rich. We're looked at as a third world country by much of the world because we allow the wealthy to get everything.
John Smart, why don't you start on this one?
I didn't get the caller's name, but I agree. And I think that the Republican Party are taking it too much like this election was a mandate, and I don't think it was. I don't think that it was my uptake on it, and I think the polls have backed this up, is that the majority of voters simply wanted a change of some kind, and they're frustrated, and they don't think that the government, Congress, or the state legislature, or the governor, or the president, or whoever is doing what they need to do in order to bring up everybody in the nation. And I think that's the case.
Owen Robinson?
I agree with Dave to the extent that I think the election results were largely based on the economy, that the American people want to see our unemployment rate get below 9% sometime in the near future without having to trick with the formula. We'd like to see people going back to work. We'd like to see our economy improve. We'd like to see our standard of living improve. We'd like to see our kids inherit an America that's better than the one that we were left. I think those are all true. As far as lowering taxes, that is not a goal. That is a means. Getting government more out of our lives, having it take less of our income so that we can spend it on our own devices, on our own families, on our own dreams and wishes, hopes and needs. Those are the things that's a means that government can do to help us. The government cannot either overall improve or make the economy decline, but it does have an influence on it, and we want to see that to be a positive influence.
Dave, thanks for that call. And this just in, the nation's unemployment rate dropped to 9.4% this last month, the lowest level in 19 months. That's because more people found jobs, but also because some people gave up on their job searches. We're still looking for a lot of jobs. Meanwhile, a news report came out, there have been a number of them, indicating that that American companies are sitting on so much cash they don't know what to do with it all, and yet they're not hiring. And Owen Robinson, I'll put this to you. How do we convince these companies to take the risk of putting American workers back to work?
Well, I think you use the exact correct term there, and it's risk. What we've seen in the past couple of years from the federal Congress and also in Wisconsin to a smaller extent is a lot of change with the stimulus package, with Medicare, with the national debt skyrocketing to $14 trillion. With all of these things going on, the intrusive actions of government, as a business owner, you sit there and say, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. The fact that it took until the final couple weeks in a lame duck Congress to even decide what our tax rates were going to be this year, businesses need some certainty to make decisions. They need to know that based on what I know today and what I know the laws will be and the tax structure will be in 2012 and 2013 and 2014 and 2020, based on that, I can take some risk and make some decisions. I think hopefully, as we see a divided Congress now, we'll see some roadblocks in place where the worst is over, that major changes won't happen, and we'll have some stability, and those companies will start to open their checkbooks and spend some of that and take some of the risk, because frankly, they make money by going out and doing business, not sitting on a pile of cash. And that's what they want to do. We just need to give them a framework and a certainty that they can do so without undue risk.
John Smart?
Well, I think that what they have been doing with this pile of cash is they've been giving themselves huge bonuses and salaries. And that's true of corporate structure, and it's also true of the Wall Street bankers. They've been getting richer and richer by the day, while more and more people have been falling into poverty. And I think that therein lies the serious problem. I believe I agree with the caller that we need to do something about taxing the wealthy. People should pay according to their ability to pay. That's an old established tradition in the United States, and it's not a bad one. As far as Social Security and Medicare, that also could be increased, because at this point we only charge Social Security tax on people up to, I think it's $100,000. Beyond that, they don't pay anything different, and I think that needs to be added to also. I agree that we have to do something about this. It's a serious problem, but I think that a lot of people in the wealthier areas, whether they be in major industrialists or Wall Street bankers, are sitting on that pile of money because they now think that the Republicans in control of the House, and hopefully to them, the rest of the government, will remove restrictions and make it easier for them to use their money any way that they please, which in past has been that opening factories in Mexico or China or wherever in order to do that and leaving the American worker out of the equation. And I think that we need to do something about that. I'm very glad to hear that the unemployment rate has dropped a little bit. I recognize that a lot of that has to do with people who are just giving up and not looking for work or taking some kind of a job just to get by, and that's too bad. And we've got a deep hole we have to dig ourselves out of. Everybody, I think, should understand that.
Well, we have a winner in our Week in Review quiz. We had quite a few correct answers, but Richard in South Range is our winner. He was chosen randomly from the pool and will receive one of the books we recently featured on the program. So, Richard, congratulations. The question was, on Monday, Scott Walker became Wisconsin's 45th governor. As part of the inauguration festivities, which song by the group The Fifth Dimension was performed by a Green Bay choir? And the answer was... The Age of Aquarius, Let the Sun Shine In, was performed by the Green Bay Notre Dame Academy Swing Choir. It's not clear why that particular song was chosen. Walker was born on November 2nd, which happened to be an election day this time around, so he's actually a Scorpio, not an Aquarius. I don't know if we want to try and analyze
that
or not.
Is that song from Hair?
Yes.
It is, and
don't associate it with the Fifth Dimension, I guess.
They made a production of it after Hair came out, which is actually a combination of two songs out of Hair.
Right, and it was a big hit for them. It was probably that and Wedding Bell Blues, two of the biggest hits for the Fifth Dimension, and that's way more information than anybody needed about that. Sorry, I spent too many years as a top 40 disc jockey not to remember those kinds of esoteric details. We don't have time, I guess, now to bring up any more issues. So I'll say thank you to you both and for participating in today's program. I really appreciate having your perspectives on the news of the week, and I know our listeners did as well.
Thank you, John, and thank you, John.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Owen. Nice talking to you both.
Okay, Owen Robinson is a columnist at the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com, bootsandsabers.com. John Smart, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party and a member of the Wisconsin Governor's Commission on the United Nations. I should mention a couple of programming notes. J.B. Van Hollen will be on Monday at 7:30 with Joy Cardine to talk about the health care lawsuit. And in this time slot, 8 o'clock on Monday, Joy will be back, of course, and she'll be talking with what, according to my script, is the head honcho of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mike Crane had the term interim removed from his job description. He's now the new director of Wisconsin Public Radio. He'll be talking about what's coming up in 2011 for Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferrett produced this hour of programming. Michelle Good and Bill Martins handled on-air production. Thanks for all their help today and, of course, earlier in the week as well. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Have a great weekend, everyone. This is the Ideas Network of WPR.